Hello, and thanks once again for taking the time to download and listen to a podcast from CelticUnderground.net. I am Harry Brady, and this is podcast number 235. This week, I am joined by former host of Celtic TV and Aberdeen fan Ali Begg to discuss the League Cup semis, the state of the Hampden pitch, Aberdeen's grip on second place, Scottish transfer market, Inter Milan game, and the Sky EPL money. The podcast was recorded before tonight's game with Partick Thistle, so wasn't that great? We're starting to see the type of football that Ronnie Dyla promised. Now the players have obviously got their fitness and health up to the level that's needed, and they're just bombing around the park, swarming all over everybody. Wonderful, isn't it? Before we get into the meat of the podcast, if you were listening last week, you will have heard me touch on the inaugural Celtic FC Foundation Golf Day, which is taking place at Renfrew Golf Club on Thursday, the 2nd of April. There's been a wee bit more about it on the club's website. The proceeds of the day will be assisting children and young people with autism, reflecting the foundation's growing commitment to the disability sector, with autism added to the body of work, which currently includes initiatives around Down syndrome as well as physical disabilities. The plan is to design a programme based on award-winning Down syndrome initiative Ability Counts. I'll not bore you with the technical golfing detail of the day, but if you wish to participate, the cost to enter a team of four is £400, with participants also having the opportunity to invite friends and partners for the afternoon lunch and entertainment at a cost of £40 per place. There's a £5,000 hole-in-one prize, various ex-Celts participating. So if you want to know more about the golf day, if you want to get a team in, I don't need to be a brilliant mathematician to work out that 400 divided by 4 is £100 a person. You can email cfcfoundation@celticfc.co.uk or phone 0141 551 4291. So that's cfcfoundation@celticfc.co.uk or 0141 551 4291. Alternatively, just go on the Celtic FC Foundation website or celticfc.net, and I'm sure there's stuff there. Anyway, enough of a plug for the foundation. I've got to keep doing that because, well, that's what I do. So enough of me. This is him, Ali Begg, with me, Harry Begg. So, Ali, how are you doing? Since last time we spoke, the Don's march towards securing second place continues.
You say that with your tongue placed firmly in your cheek, don't you?
We'll go on this, but I'll only touch on it because obviously with the BBC being, you have to support Aberdeen to get a job in the BBC. They are promoting this theory of an Aberdeen title challenge to Celtic, with yet Inverness are only 3 points behind Aberdeen. Mm. So if either Inverness are in the title challenge as well, or they're not, and if you don't think, then the reason why you wouldn't think they're in the title challenge is the same reason why a Celtic fan wouldn't think Aberdeen in the title challenge.
I think the reason that it's that the media as a whole have got all of a sudden, they've jumped on a bandwagon, is because I personally think it's getting rather romantic. You know, Scottish football has been waiting for 30 years for Aberdeen to do something, to possibly get back to what Aberdeen achieved in the late 70s and early 80s, and to a degree, the first couple of years in the early 90s. So for the romantics amongst us, and I include myself in that, I absolutely fully concur with how the media have reacted to what Derek McInnes and Aberdeen are doing at the moment, because at long last, something is actually happening. There are stirrings, there are rumblings at Pittodrie that have not been there for many, many, many years. And why not? You know, I've had so much fun recently on Twitter and Facebook with all my Celtic supporting pals and just having fun about the fact that all of a sudden we are actually challenging you. Yes, Celtic have got games in hand, and I understand that, and I get it, and Celtic will pull away, and I'm under no illusions that Celtic will pull away, but at the moment, let me enjoy it. Let Aberdeen enjoy it. Let the media enjoy it, because do you know what? It's great fun. And I think if you ask the majority of Celtic fans, they welcome the chase.
Well, absolutely. As I was speaking to people prior to when we played the lesser Glasgow team, and they were saying, do you miss Rangers? And I said, no, I don't miss Rangers. We miss a challenge. Mm. And I think I'm slightly frustrated at some Celtic fans, not that many, but some Celtic fans who the very fact that we've got Aberdeen close to us see that as a sign that we've gone backwards. Actually, if you take the average points tally that Celtic would have after this point in the season, I did it the other day, looked at it, we're 9 points behind where we were last season, but that was different. We are 5 points ahead of where we were the season before. We are 1 point behind where we were the season before that and 1 point ahead of where we were the season before that. In other words, we are pretty much on the same number of points we should be. The difference is Aberdeen are beating everybody else. That's the difference.
I was just going to say, for me, there's a bigger story there. That, for me, tells everything about Aberdeen, not Celtic, and Inverness Caledonian Thistle.
Yeah, and I agree. And my frustration with those Celtic fans who think a challenge from Aberdeen shows that we've gone backwards. No, we're where we should be. Aberdeen have, 10 games unbeaten in the league? Something like that?
Yeah.
8 out of the last 10? 1?
Yeah. Yeah, it's honestly a remarkable turnaround. But to be honest with you, I'm not surprised, because we've signed some good players. We've produced some good players. Aberdeen always produce good players. Always. We have a renowned academy. Okay, we might not have the facilities, but we have the staff, and we have really good people overseeing the academy. And you don't need the facilities to make a decent youngster. The youngster needs to be taught properly. He doesn't need 5-star changing rooms. He doesn't need 5-star football pitches. He doesn't need a Michelin chef. He needs proper coaches. And Aberdeen don't have the facilities. They use the same training facilities that they have done for years and years and years, but yet they continually produce players because they're coached in the proper manner. So all of a sudden, we find ourselves with people like Peter Pollitt, Ryan Jack, Cammy Smith. These boys all coming through the youth system who are now starting to seriously make noises in the first team and attracting the attention of big clubs. Mm-hmm. Look at Ryan Jack. He's attracting the attentions of leading Sierra A football clubs, and so he should, because he's done incredibly well. And I sincerely hope he signs a new deal and he finishes his education at Pittodrie, because too many before him have not finished their educations and have jumped ship prematurely and haven't really fulfilled their potential. So, yeah, it's good. It's very, very good.
And to add to that feel-good factor, you spent money in the transfer window.
Yeah. Do you know, we are out of debt. Aberdeen Football Club are out of debt. So we can now afford to go out and spend money. And do you know what I really... What pleased me the most was that we actually stopped a trend of Celtic being the only football club to spend money in the January transfer window. And for me, it speaks volumes of how Aberdeen Football Club is being run at the moment, not just as a football club, but as a business as well. Stuart Milne at the helm for many, many years, Duncan Fraser, the chief executive officer, the board as a whole, just a very, very sound business model and business plan. And spending £300,000 on Kenny McLean, who for me has been one of the stars of the Scottish Premiership, who I now think, and I don't mean any disrespect to St Mirren, but with what he's now going to get at Pittodrie, with the players around him, with the coaching around him, with the club around him, I think we're going to see a real star of the future. I really do. You know, it's difficult for me to judge his performance on just watching highlights on Saturday against Ross County. But even just the highlights, just simple things like first touch, get the ball, move it on, get into position, not afraid to go at his immediate opponent, not afraid to bring other people into play. Looking good, looking very good.
I mean, for me, listening to, I remember a couple of years ago, Radio Scotland did Through the Window on the last night of the transfer windows. And Through the Window on Radio Scotland comprised a chat about what Sky News were talking about, because there was nothing happening in Scotland. Whereas this transfer window, you had four or five things going on at the same time. You had Celtic buying Dundee United players, you had Dundee United looking at buying Hibs players, you had Hibs bringing in players, you had Aberdeen signing players. I actually thought to myself, 20 years after David Murray ruined Scottish football, it's finally back on its feet.
It's healthy.
Yep.
Healthy across the board. Look at the clubs that are out of debt. Look at the clubs that are looking to come out of debt. For me, it's healthy. I just don't understand. The perfect example is Celtic, just recently been voted the third most financially stable club in Europe. Again, it speaks volumes for the people that are running our football clubs. And this whole thing about, you know, I have a lot of fun with it on Twitter about Armageddon. There is no Armageddon. Mm-hmm. And it was the worst thing that you know, the administrator of our football said, you know, we will reach Armageddon. We will not, because Scottish people come together when their backs are up against the wall, and there's a unity among Scottish people, and there's a unity amongst the Scottish football fraternity to make sure that we wouldn't reach Armageddon. And we should all be incredibly proud of ourselves. We really should. And yes, you know, there can be the rivalry amongst the fans. There will always be the rivalry amongst the fans, but we should all stand together and applaud each other for the way that all football clubs, bar one or two who have had foreign owners and foreign investors, who have mismanaged their companies and their football clubs. But the majority have been absolutely spot on and first class, and they should be applauded.
Yeah, so taking all that into consideration to get onto the talking of the football field, so everything's great and hunky-dory and feel-good at Aberdeen. So what happened in the Cup semi-final?
Do you know, I'm still thinking about it, and I just don't know. I'm actually quite angry about it. On the day, I was furious, because we should have killed them off. And it's been our major flaw this season that we just haven't killed teams off. When we've put ourselves in a really good position, we just haven't done it. And I'm not just talking about when we lose games or draw games. I mean when we've won games as well. Mm-hmm. We've made it nervous for ourselves in the final sort of quarter or 20 minutes of the game, where there's only been one goal in it. We just haven't killed teams off. I think David Goodwillie, who is still settling, in my opinion. I think he's been a fantastic signing, and he's brought something different to us, which I like. You know, at long last, we're playing football on the deck and not in the air, and it's how football should be played, in my opinion. And he works well with Adam Rooney, but he has this problem in front of goal. I don't think he's a natural goal scorer, and maybe I'm doing him a disservice, but I just don't see him as a natural goal scorer. And I've watched him this season, and he's put himself in fantastic positions and just hasn't scored, mm-hmm. you know. And it was a huge disappointment for me. We didn't play well on the day. We gave the ball away cheaply. We were second to most balls. And when we should have got on top of them, we didn't. There were periods in the game where we played some nice football, looked like we were going to kill them off. And then I don't know, just something happened. And it made me nervous. It made me nervous. And I wasn't surprised when Dundee United equalised. And to be honest with you, I wasn't overly surprised when they scored the second. Okay, you know, Mark Brown made a horrendous error, and I think he got caught in two minds.
Yep.
Do I catch this or do I push this round the post? And he did neither.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some may agree, some may disagree. I think the boy, whose name completely escapes me, I think he was in an offside position when the ball came over. So, listen, you know, I don't want to make excuses. I don't want to make excuses. When we go 1-0 up, we should be killing teams off, and we didn't. And I'm not going to blame the pitch. I know it's an easy way out. It's an easy excuse to make. Can't blame the pitch. You know, these guys are professional football players. I'm sure the majority of them have played on worse pitches than that. So, man, it was so frustrating. But every cloud has a silver lining as far as I'm concerned, because my wife said I wasn't going to get a day pass to Glasgow if we got to the final.
Right.
So in a strange kind of way, I'm not really missing out because I wouldn't have been able to go anyway.
Your point about the second goal and the player being offside, that's actually one of the things about the modern player being active rule. Because he didn't touch it, he wasn't active. But a goalkeeper doesn't have the ability to, in the space of a second or two, think to himself, actually, I think that guy's standing in an offside position. So if he gets a flick on it and the ball goes in the other direction, I can ignore him and I can just play for the anticipation that he misses it. A keeper will just see the ball coming across and be having to wait for the last second to see if the guy hits it or not.
Yeah. It, for me, he was at fault for the first goal as well. You know, if a ball comes across a six-yard box, for me, that is the goalkeeper's area. And he should be coming for that ball come hell or high water. A goalkeeper should command his six-yard box. So when he didn't come, well, he came for the ball and completely missed it. Whether he got blocked or whether he didn't, whether he got stuck in a ruck of players, you know, is neither here or there. He should have commanded that six-yard box. But this, is he active? Isn't he active? Why can't we just go back to he's offside? Whether he's active or not active, if he's in an offside position, he's offside. And why FIFA, UEFA, and all these guys decided to change that rule is beyond me, because it's caused no end of problems. And if we got back to the old way of playing football, if you're offside, you're offside, whether you're active or not. End of story.
The only counter to that, and this is one of the things, when I was taught football, I was taught the principle of offside when you are interfering with play, i.e. if you were in an attacking position, you were offside. The problem was referees didn't seem to do the interfering with play bit, and you could have a guy get injured, an attacking player get injured 2 yards from the touchline outside the box, and the ball would come back in, the referee would give offside because of that guy who was 20 yards from the ball. So they then changed it to, it's simple, if he touches it when he's offside, if he doesn't, he doesn't.
Yeah.
My point would be, actually, if the referees had adopted the proper rules back 10 years ago, whenever it was, I thought they were pretty clear rules. The guy was either interfering with play or not. They now use the term active, but the term active seems to be, if he touches it, he's offside.
Yeah.
But at times, and you getting back to my point about Brown, at times a defender might be conscious of the fact there's a guy behind him.
Yeah.
And change his position on the park based on the fact, as I've said before, he doesn't have the opportunity to say, do you know what? I'm pretty confident my colleague at left back's in the right position, so I can ignore the guy behind me.
You see, when I played, you know, we're going back many, many years now. So we're talking early 80s to early 2000s. I had to give up playing in 2003 when I broke my leg. So the way I was taught football when I was when I used to train with Aberdeen, well, the pick of the youngsters from the Aberdeen area at Pittodrie on a Tuesday and Thursday night, is I was a sweeper. and I was converted to right back. And we always played a high line, mm-hmm. always. It was the way I was coached. You play a high line because if the boy runs in behind you, he's offside. If the boy stands behind you, he's offside. You don't have to worry about him. So I actually do, I take your point, I have a degree of sympathy with central defenders and fullbacks these days because you can't play that high line anymore. Because you can have a player standing 20 yards behind you, but then run in front of you to come behind you again to collect a through ball. And he wasn't offside. Even when the original ball was played over the top, he's not interfering with that play, but he becomes active once he touches the play. But he's come from an onside position. For me, the rule is too clouded. But hey, listen, that's modern football. You know, we could discuss this all night, couldn't we?
Yeah.
For me, the rule's just too clouded. It's too clouded. I don't know the answer. I wish I did.
Maybe the answer's to do away with the offside rule.
Yeah. 10 men inside the 18-yard box every time. Why not?
Yeah, exactly. After your defeat by Dundee United, there was then the Celtic Rangers Cup semi-final. Did you get to see that?
I produced it for BN Sports out here.
Right.
We won't talk about the production because unfortunately it was, I had a nightmare of a day. But that's office stuff, which we won't get into. I was actually, I have to say, slightly disappointed because I do think the pitch played its part. The pitch was horrendous. And during our production, you know, I showed shots of how bad the pitch was from the day before and showed the groundsman working on the pitch and made sure that my host made the point about how bad the pitch is and educate those in Australia and in the Middle East and North Africa regions where we produced to who might not have seen the semi-final before because it didn't have any television coverage, which is another thing which completely annoyed me, how bad the pitch really was. And I don't believe in playing consecutive back-to-back semi-finals at the same stadium.
No.
I'm a bit of a traditionalist when it comes to stuff like this. I'm a bit of an old hat. I prefer the games to be played at neutral venues and for the national stadium to be saved for the final. I don't know what it is, but I always think the national stadium should be saved for the final. I get why they do it. I understand why they do it, but I don't agree with it. I think the semi-final should be played at neutral venues, you know, be it Tannadice, Tynecastle, you know, Ibrox, wherever. I just think it should be because it saves the final. The final is an event in itself, and it should be an event, and it should be an all singing and dancing show business event. And it's not anymore, and it's not for the players anymore, and it's not for the fans anymore because they've already experienced it in the semi-final. Do you get my point?
I do. I mean, the only thing I would say is, so where do you, what neutral venue do you play a Celtic versus Rangers game?
Yeah, that you could have played it at Murrayfield. I don't know. You know, we could have played it at Murrayfield. I don't know. In fact, we should have played it at Murrayfield. Why not?
Be a better pitch than Hampden was.
Yeah, exactly. And let's be honest, it's a better stadium. I think it's, from what I understand, it's got better facilities. It's more, I understand, and I've not been to Murrayfield for many, many years, but I believe it's more accessible for fans as well. So I think we should play the semi-final. I think we should play, you know, the really big games, you know, depending on what games they are, one at Murrayfield and the other, I don't know. You know, Aberdeen United, for me, should have been played at Tynecastle. Why not?
Well, I mean,
has been many times before. Why not again?
It gets back to you know, I used to think we needed a Hampden neutral venue until Hampden wasn't there. And then I fell firmly into the Fergus McCann camp of why create a stadium that gets used so rarely, which is actually not even the second biggest, it's the third biggest stadium in Glasgow. Yeah. It's not even the second biggest or biggest stadium in Glasgow and all the arguments as to why, for me, you need Hampden don't stack up. Mm. And I think a better proposition back in the time, and I've measured it recently. The footprint of the car parks and everything that Hampden sits on is about 33 acres, which in today's market is about 33 million quid. And for me, they should have said to Hibs and Hearts, when the stadiums were all getting turned into all-seater stadiums, if you can each contribute, sell off your ground, and you can each contribute £5 million each, we'll stick in the rest and we'll build a 30,000-seat stadium at Meadowbank Stadium in Edinburgh. That's two sets of stands are green and two are maroon. You turn around to the two Dundee teams and you say, you chuck in a bit of money and we will build one stadium in Dundee that's 20,000, 25,000. And you say to Aberdeen, and we will give you some money for you to have a stadium that the away fans can see 100% of the pitch instead of 70%. And you can have a decent stadium. And that means that Scotland could have then played at a 30,000 in Aberdeen, a 20,000 in Dundee, a 35,000 in Edinburgh, and you've got a 50,000, a 60,000 in Glasgow, maybe even say to Kilmarnock so that you have an 18,000 in Kilmarnock. So you've got a range of stadiums around the country that can cope with Scotland games and can be neutral venues for cup games. And you use you use Hampden when you need Murrayfield if you ever need to use Murrayfield.
Yeah, I have no counter to that argument whatsoever. To me, it's the way forward. I agree with everything that you said. And even though we might have had a slight pop at Hampden, you know, the news today that Glasgow and Hampden has been awarded as a host city for Euro 2020, you know, to get three group stage games and a knockout stage game, is fantastic news for, you know, for Scotland, for Glasgow, for Hampden. I just hope the pitch is good in 5 years' time.
Well, you know, I agree that it's fantastic news. As a spectator, my disappointment is not only is it not the biggest stadium in Glasgow, it's also, with the exception of if you sit in the main stand, it's also the inferior of the three stadiums in Glasgow in terms of atmosphere and views of the park. But it's the SFA's ground, so they're not going to not submit Hampden and put forward Celtic Park. For example.
Yeah, you know, I first went to the new Hampden. I'd always been to the old Hampden. And I first went to the new Hampden in 95 for the Skull Cup final against Dundee. And I wasn't impressed with it at all. In fact, I was really, really disappointed with it. And I was disappointed with the atmosphere. Now, I know there's, 20 years difference. But when we played the final, or 19 years difference, when we played the final last year at Celtic Park, okay, it's different eras, different fans, I understand that. But the fact that, you know, we took, 40,000 fans to Celtic Park, including myself, my brother and my father-in-law, it was just, for me, it was just a sensational atmosphere. And Celtic Park has... For me, just, you know, when I worked at Celtic TV, when I went to Champions League nights, when I went to Old Firm games, it was hairs on the back of your neck standing to attention time. It really was. And it was weird for me being an Aberdeen fan and experiencing that at Celtic Park without my team being there. You can't, you know... It's just it's an incredible stadium for atmosphere. It really is.
So apart from the pitch being dreadful and the stadium being dreadful, you said you were disappointed with the game. Was that really because Celtic just stopped playing in the second half and contained it?
To me, Celtic were never in any danger, and they never were going to be in any danger. And I actually got into quite a heated debate with some of my colleagues about why the Aberdeen game wasn't being broadcast. And for the uneducated of those that tried to argue against me, and some on your podcast may argue here, some may think I'm talking out my backside, they're entitled to their opinion. The bigger game was the Aberdeen Dundee United game. The bigger event was Sunday's game. Mm-hmm. There's a big difference. Aberdeen and Dundee United are top five Scottish Premiership. You've got Celtic leading the Scottish Premiership against some Minnows team from the Championship, with the greatest respect.
No,
it was the bigger event.
It was a wasn't. It was a freak show.
Game. Yeah.
It was the bearded lady.
Yeah, it just when I was watching it, I don't know. It's like in the build up to the game, the guests on my program were saying, you know, it's going to be an Old Firm blood and thunder. I'm like, that, guys, it really isn't. It really isn't, because Rangers are not a good footballing side. And they don't, for me, they don't play an attractive style of football. Mm-hmm. And this is not, I never ever thought this is going to be a really good match. It never was going to be a good match. For me, Celtic were never in any danger. And from the moment they kicked off, they never looked in any danger. And Celtic absolutely cruised through that semi-final. I don't think they got out of second gear in the semi-final. Yeah, there was a couple of naughty little challenges here and there, which I suppose, maybe you could expect that now and then, with the event of the game and maybe people's emotions getting the better of them. I don't know. But it was never going to be a great football match. And I would like to think that the majority of the people listening to this podcast would agree with me, because if they were going to Hampden expecting a 5-5 or a 4-4 or a 3-3, it was never going to happen, guys. It really wasn't. I expected Celtic to win that game comfortably, and they took the foot off the gas in the second half, and understandably so. Job was done after 25 minutes.
I actually felt pre-match the atmosphere from the Celtic fans was different than the Rangers fans. They were celebrating. Everything about what Rangers need to do is to be on a par with Celtic. That's why every time anybody connect with Rangers talks about themselves, they throw Celtic in the equation. Dave King talks about, I think he uses Celtic something like, you know, every second sentence, when he should be talking about being on a par with Hearts first before even looking at the SPL. It's all about being on a par, and the Celtic fans, I thought, were a bit muted. I felt it was partly because we had nothing to gain and everything to lose in that game, and by half time the atmosphere was muted amongst the Celtic fans, because we knew we were playing a team inferior to any team we'd played in the SPL this season.
It was just a bizarre. It was a bizarre game, a bizarre day. The whole thing for me just felt odd. And you know, when I did my production as well, I came away just feeling, we didn't quite nail this tonight. And I don't know what it was. And I was a wee bit disappointed with the way that the chat went about, you know, Rangers need to get back in the Scottish Premiership for the good of Scottish football and all this. And, you know, Scottish football has died a death because Rangers are not in it. And I'm like, no, guys, this is not the way we should be going. And, what's happened to Rangers has happened, and we move on and, you know, we make the best of what we have at the moment. And as I said earlier, we have made the best of this current situation with what's going on in Scottish football. And again, I reiterate the point, we should be incredibly proud of ourselves right across the board. So, yeah, it was another game of football. It was another game for Celtic to get through. It was another game for Celtic to win. It was another cup final for Celtic to get through. But I got to be honest, because Aberdeen didn't get there, to be honest with you, I couldn't give a monkey's what happened on the day.
So what you may have a monkey's about is how you think the next few weeks of the season are going to go. Celtic, we're recording this. Celtic play Partick Thistle in about 2 hours' time, an hour and a half's time. Yeah. And then next week, Celtic play Inter Milan.
Mm-hmm.
So very quickly, how do you
think? I'm doing.
You're doing that? So how do you think that's going to go?
Yeah. Do you know what? I've watched Inter Milan recently, and Inter Milan are not good at the moment. And if there was ever a time to play them now. I watched them against Sassuolo, I don't know how you pronounce it. I don't speak Italian. Sassuolo, I think is how you pronounce it. And they got absolutely decked. And I'm like, Celtic have got a hell of a chance here. They really do. It's going to be very, very tight in the San Siro. But as we know, Celtic, on their day at Celtic Park, on a European night, can take anybody. And I have no fear in Celtic being able to take Inter Milan at Celtic Park. It all, of course, depends what happens in the San Siro. but Inter Milan are there for the taking. Roberto Mancini has not settled, and the natives are already very, very restless. So he's under a huge amount of pressure, I personally think. There's more pressure under him than there is on your lines,
yeah,
without a shadow of a doubt. And I can't wait to do it. I'm producing the Liverpool that game, but we make Celtic part of the production.
So once that tie's out of the way, we go to Milan. We get a result in Milan, and we come back to play Aberdeen at Celtic Park.
Come on. For me, this is when we will find out, as Aberdeen fans, just how far we have come. For me, this game will decide whether our boys have become men. Because all the pressure, I think, is on us. Because all of a sudden, the expectations have risen. And everyone, as we alluded to earlier, every man and his dog now has got their eye on Aberdeen. And how are Aberdeen going to react? And again, I've had a lot of fun over the past couple of weeks when we dropped points against St Johnstone, and we dropped points against Dundee. But the Dundee game actually, for me, said a great deal about how far we've actually come, because even up to a season ago, definitely 2 years ago, at 3-1, we would have given up. That game would have gone. It would have bypassed us. My God, to come back from 3-1 behind in the manner that we went down 3-1, to me, it spoke volumes of how far we have come. And everyone said, oh, it's 2 points lost. No, it's not. Believe me, in my opinion, that was a point gained, a valuable point gained. St. Johnstone was a different kettle of fish. We didn't play well on the night. We looked very, very vulnerable at the back. In fact, every time St. Johnstone attacked, it looked like they were going to score. But I think we've sorted ourselves out at the back. It's a shame we've lost Ash Taylor, because he was just starting to command the back. Good partnership with Mark Reynolds. The new boy that we've got in, Donovan Daniels, I know he's injured, but I don't know the extent of his injury. But against Dundee United, yeah, it's his first game. Difficult to judge in the first game. Give him a couple of games to really settle in. But I liked what I saw. He was at fault, I thought, for Dundee United's equaliser because he lost his man. But everything else about him, I liked. So, oh, my Lord, what a game. What a game for us. I hope is we just prove to ourselves the belief. I just hope the belief that Derek McInnes has instilled in the team, I hope it rubs off on the boys on the day. And I hope that they go into the game with no fear. Because, and I think you and I spoke about this before, I want these lads to go to Celtic Park and embrace Celtic Park and what Celtic Park offers. It's why they've become professional football players. The perfect point was made by, I think it was Stuart Armstrong when he signed recently, when he said, I've come to Celtic Park because look at the atmosphere. This is why we become professional football players, so that we can play in atmospheres like this week in, week out. That's the type of attitude that I hope the Aberdeen players have when they go into that game against Celtic. And for me, that game will prove how far we have come psychologically, as well as from an ability point of view, than it probably has in the last God knows how long. It's a huge, huge game of football. And I don't think it should be underestimated what a massive game of football it will be. And I know a lot of your listeners to this will be dismissive of those thoughts, because for you guys, it's just another game of football. And I know that a lot of Celtic fans will expect Aberdeen to bottle it, because they will argue that Aberdeen always bottle it.
Well, you did mention the 3-1 comeback that you did. And as you're talking about that, I'm thinking of Aberdeen being 3-1 up at Celtic Park with 5 minutes to go and Celtic winning 4-3.
Thanks. Thanks for reminding me.
And actually, there's been a couple of times when Dundee United, Aberdeen and Hearts, those are three teams where there's been a couple of times I've looked across and thought, if I were a supporter of Aberdeen or Dundee United or Hearts, and they've been either leading or level with Celtic going in the last 2 minutes, I've thought to myself, if I was a fan of that club, I would now be thinking, and this is when they're going to score, because they always do. And I suppose your issue is, do your players think that?
Yes. That's all I'm interested in. I'm only interested to see how the guys react on the day. It's, for me, that's what it's all about. And, you know, I tweeted about it the other day. I'm actually really encouraged by the noises coming out of Pittodrie. There's a shift in psychological thinking. There's a shift in attitude where it's like, you know, Adam Rooney's come out and said, we're going to push them. We're going to push them all the way. Shane Logan has come out and said, we can give Celtic a run for the title. And we are confident we're going to give them a good run for the title. I'm just quietly enjoying those noises coming out of Pittodrie because it's positive. To me, it's showing a positive mental attitude. And it's hugely important for this group of players that the togetherness and that mental attitude is the best that it can absolutely be. And I think Derek McInnes is instilling that. I really do. It's exciting times. Let us enjoy it. Let me have my fun with you. Don't knock it. And don't come on Twitter and start abusing me, because I'll abuse you back, because I'm loving every minute of it. And any Aberdeen fan in my position, you know, who was born in the early 70s and grew up when we were winning everything and has been through this hurt for so many years, this is why we're enjoying it again, because we've been catapulted back to our youth. Oh my God, I can't wait for this game. It's on the 1st, right? It's on the 1st of February, right?
Sunday the 1st, yep. 12 o'clock kickoff UK time.
Oh my Lord. I think we're showing it live on BN Sports. And if we're not, we will be, because trust me, I'll be into my boss's office.
Well, I suppose your push for showing it live would be if Celtic were to get passed into Milan, then you'd be showing live a last 16 Europa League team.
Yeah, yeah. Well, to be fair, you know, being sports, I've been an advocate of trying to promote the Scottish game across the board. Yeah, not just Aberdeen, but across the board. I've always been an advocate of Scottish football. Anybody that knows me, especially because of what has happened and this nonsense about Armageddon, which really gets on my tits. And to their utmost credit, BeIN Sports, and I'm not just saying this because they're my employers, but to their utmost credit, we do put them at least one, if not two games on a week, if it's not a 3 o'clock kickoff. We can't compete with the 3 o'clock Premier League kickoffs. We just can't, because that's our market.
Yep.
But the early kickoffs, you know, a Friday night game, you know, we show the majority of the games on one of the channels at least. So I have no doubt that we'll be showing Celtic Aberdeen.
Well, I know you do, because there's a few Celtic supporters that I follow on Twitter and who follow me on Twitter who listening to this podcast. I'm thinking of, for example, Graham1A, that watch the games on BN Sports, and they're all, so I know you do your best to show them. But talking of TV coverage of it, very last thing before we go, what's your thoughts on Sky upping the cost for English Premiership football by 70, or Sky and BT Sports, by 70% to £5 billion?
The mind boggles. It really does. It's an obscene amount of money. It's just obscene. And to me, it's a reflection on how the market has gone. And I knew there'd be a rise. I had every expectation there would be a rise. But £5 billion? Come on. Seriously? £10 million a game? The world has gone absolutely crazy. But listen, you know, it's a product. It's a huge marketing monster. It dominates sporting viewing, not just in the UK, but all over the world. So, It's obscene, but I'm not overly surprised. I'm really not. I just hope that the broadcasters, as I know they will, do it a justice, because with that amount of money per game, it deserves justice. But first and foremost, the most important thing is that the broadcasters do not forget the one fundamental core behind our game, and that is the fans. They have to remember the fans. And we all know football is a business these days. We all know it's completely shifted. And sometimes it pains me. Just don't forget the fans. That's all I've got to say on it.
Yeah, I mean, just to touch on you saying about don't forget the fans, the one thing for me as a TV person yourself, you wouldn't want to cover grounds, empty grounds with no atmosphere. So you want an atmosphere. That's one of the things that is the production that you're wanting. You're wanting that to, you're wanting the person sitting watching it to think, I wish I was there.
Yeah.
And the only thing about it, if I was Sky, maybe they couldn't care less, but if I was Sky, I would be thinking medium term about my investment in the product of the English game, and I wouldn't be wanting kids priced out of it. And I would, with such a massive contract, I would be looking for something in it about the pricing of attendances at the ground.
Mm.
To make sure that there's people turning up to watch it.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's up to the football clubs at the end of the day what they decide to do. And I don't know. I don't think I'm the right person to answer the question. I can certainly give you an opinion, but I think there has to be a serious rethink of ticket pricing. There has to be, if you go to an average English Premier League game these days, by the time you've bought, say, a bog standard ticket, for example, the perfect example is that dude that went to watch Southampton against QPR. He paid £38 for his ticket, and it was all over the press, and he couldn't even see the pitch because of I think it was the television gantry that was in front of him.
Yeah, that's right.
Just seriously, come on. I used to go to Arsenal. When I lived in Hertfordshire, I used to go to Highbury all the time. Most home games, I used to go to Highbury when I played for their charity football side. And the tickets that we were given were vastly reduced prices, but that's because they had obstructed views. Mm-hmm. So you had to stand behind the pillar, or the pillar was obstructing the goal, so you had to jump from left to right, from right to left to see the action. But you got a hugely discounted ticket because of that inconvenience. I just hope that the football clubs do right by the fans. I think it's time now that they seriously start thinking about reducing the ticket prices. Maybe we should follow the Bundesliga model. Stadiums are packed out week in, week out. I produce the Bundesliga for BeIN Sports out here, and it's very, very rare that there's ever an empty stadium, or a half empty stadium. It's always three quarters to maximum full, because tickets are affordable. When I first met my wife, we went to watch Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund. It's the biggest game in Germany, at the Allianz Arena, and the two tickets cost me €50. Two tickets for the biggest game in Germany. It's accessible to the fans. The likes of Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund make tickets accessible to the fans because they're, in relative terms to the Premier League, they're cheap.
Yep.
So maybe with, the financial security television deal, because it will financially secure a number of clubs, maybe they can now start to seriously afford to reduce the ticket prices.
I'd like to think so, but I actually think what's going to happen is a 20 grand a week player will now become a 40 grand a week player.
No danger. Absolutely no danger. I completely agree with you. World's gone bonkers.
So, final thing, just before we go, what's your prediction for the Celtic Aberdeen score on the 1st of March?
Oh, dearie me. I've not even thought about it. To me, and I'm not trying to duck the question. we just have to take it one game at a time. I know it's an old cliche, and forgive me, but we must take it one game at a time. We can't look too far ahead, because if we get too far ahead of ourselves, we'll get complacent. And that's when we'll get into trouble. Think of the next game, get through that game, move on to the next. And when the Celtic game comes around, that's when we'll start thinking about it. And that's when I'll start thinking about it. Maybe, or maybe, will I be able to keep strong and stay off Twitter? Probably not. I don't know. I need to see how the next couple of weeks go first. Can we come back and do another one?
If Celtic win. And we'll leave it at that. Thanks, Ali Beg.
Pleasure.
Cheers.
For a while, to love was all we could do. We were young and we knew in our eyes. We're alive, deep inside we knew our love was true.
I hope you enjoyed that podcast, and Anthony will be along with the next one, edition number 236, where again, I'll give you some more information about what you can do for the fantastic work of the Celtic FC Foundation, and it will be an Inter Milan preview referencing our history podcast. What would you expect with St. Anthony if it wasn't touching on the history of our fine club? So enough from me. This is me, Harry Brady. That was him, Ali Beg, saying good night.
Never knew that what was wrong, oh baby, wasn't right. We tried to find what we had till the sadness was all we had.